We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Good day, welcome to Play or Not to Play. That is the question everybody's discussing today. Holy mackerel. Last night, you saw the Golden State Warriors. They knocked off Drake and company, and they ended up advancing at least to Game 6, but they did it at the expense of Kevin Durant. We'll get into that discussion. Brewers back at it today, taking on the Houston Astros. And can they continue winning? That's going to be the big question over a very good team. As a matter of fact, one of the top teams in all of Major League Baseball, the Brewers are taking on tonight, so... we'll get into that discussion as well. We've got Jim Callis, a senior writer for the MLB Pipeline. We'll talk to him about what the Brewers did in the MLB draft. And the Green Bay Packers are back at minicamp. We'll hear from Mike Clemens. He's going to be joining us coming up here in about 45 minutes as Mike is in Green Bay. So we'll hear from him. Matt Thomas from Sports Talk 790 in Houston will give us the lowdown on the Astros. And we've got some racing today. Simon Pagenaud, Indy 500 champion. He joined us on this program prior to winning the Indy 500. Wants to come back and grab a little mojo as they get ready to race through Elkhart Lake and Road America. So getting ready for that. So we got a lot on the docket today. But the big news really in the world of sports is the devastation right now that the Warriors franchise is feeling. Now, I know some of you are, you know, say, well, you just re-injured it. Originally, now here's just my synopsis of it. Okay, originally when Kevin Durant went down, they said it was a calf strain, and it never looked like a calf strain. I know they said that's what it was, and the doctors are swearing by it publicly, and so is their general manager, but it never looked that way. He was grabbing too low on his ankle. So last night, well, we know he goes through practice. He comes back, rehabilitates, and then, the doctors tell Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr's walking out of the arena last night at Scotiabank Arena. He is saying over and over again, the doctors told us he couldn't hurt it any worse. He can't hurt it any worse. He couldn't get hurt any worse, over and over and over again. So the narrative then becomes, what did the doctors know? Was he forced to come back and play because they were down in the series? Did he want to come back and play? And you give him credit. You know, you give Kevin Durant credit for gutting it out and trying to come out and do that. Now, why he played 13 of the first 14 minutes of the game, fresh off of coming back from an injury, I don't know. But I don't know how much, if any, that played into it from fatigue. But nevertheless, the word is he blew his Achilles. And that is usually a year to 18 months. So this offseason, for all the thought process of he's heading off to New York and he's going to get paid big money and he's going to go revive that franchise. Now New York still may take a chance on him. I don't know, but that pretty much is dead in the water. So he can opt in. He can remain rehabbing next year with Golden State, still get paid what he was going to get paid. And then, the next year, most likely, come back and be ready to go and then venture off into the free agent market. But Kevin Durant tried to gut it out last night and blew out his Achilles. Now an Achilles is different than an MCL or an ACL. It is a thick and bulbous at the end with a lot of strands and striations of muscle and tendon and stuff all wrapped in there. If you've ever seen an MRI of one, I don't know how to describe it, but when they blow, it's just like everything just frays off, and then it all has to be put back together and reattached, and it just, or unless it just completely snaps in half and just frays apart, then you're talking about even additional surgery and additional rehab time for that. So now I'm by no means a doctor, but I've seen this a couple of times, at least enough to know a little bit about it. So it's not going to be a short process for Kevin Durant, and clearly their general manager, clearly their head coach, and clearly his teammates were upset by this. Now, Bob Myers, he made the announcement last night that here was the announcement that Kevin Durant had suffered the Achilles injury.
It's an Achilles injury. I don't know the extent of it. He'll have an MRI tomorrow. Prior to coming back, he went through 4 weeks with our medical team, and it was thorough, and it was experts and multiple MRIs and multiple doctors, and we felt good about the process. He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision.
Now, that's Bob Myers. He is the president of basketball operations, and also talked about people now questioning, because there was national people saying, well, Kevin Durant just doesn't want to come back. He wants to save himself for free agency, or at least to be able to go out and shop his wares. And Bob Myers addressed Kevin Durant's desire to play in the finals.
Let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball, and the people that questioned whether he wanted to get back to this team were wrong. And I'm not here to, he's one of the most misunderstood people. He's a good teammate, he's a good person. It's not fair. I'm lucky to know him.
It's a very emotional president of basketball operations, Bob Myers. He also says we won't know more until Kevin Durant actually gets the MRI on the damage.
I don't have all the information on what really the extent of what it all means until we get an MRI. But the people that worked with him and cleared him are good people. They're good people.
So the argument is, well, look, the doctors are the ones that said he couldn't hurt it worse, and he did. So is, you know, and I hate to go there because now the first thing people say is, well, that's malpractice. Well, okay, I guess if you're going on doctor's advice saying he couldn't hurt it any worse, and in fact he did, so, but I don't know. It's a precarious position, and Myers says, look, Kevin Durant, it doesn't matter what everybody said. He just wanted to get out there and play basketball.
You know, sports is, it's people. Sports is people. I know Kevin takes a lot of hits sometimes, but he just wants to play basketball, and right now he can't. Basketball has gotten him through his life. I don't know that we can all understand how much it means to him. He just wants to play basketball with his teammates and compete.
So he, and this is a guy that's been a finals MVP a couple of times. So it's not like he had something to prove, because he didn't. He just wanted to be out there with his guys. So anyway, last night, while if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, on one hand, very joyous, on the other hand, very disappointing and very disconcerting. So
I find it even more disturbing that a lot of Toronto fans last night were cheering when Kevin Durant got hurt.
Now, I haven't even gotten into that because I wanted to spend almost an entire segment on it. The disgust I felt even more so now for Toronto Raptors fans and that franchise is off the charts. I had said last night, people said, well, you got to get over it. You have an obsession with Drake. Look, I just don't like Drake roaming the sidelines. And he's a guy that, you know, you love to hate, much like coaches or whomever. That you just, you know, I hated Tony La Russa when he was with the Cardinals. I wanted to beat the Cardinals, to see the Brewers beat the Cardinals, more so because of Tony La Russa than anything else. I'm not a Cardinals hater. I enjoy parts of their franchise. I know broadcasters within their franchise. I think they're good people. But I hated Tony La Russa. I hate Drake. I just can't stand the smugness and the pomposity on the sideline. And now I think the rest of the world is rooting against the Toronto Raptors, unless you are a Raptors fan, because of the classlessness with which you conducted yourself last night in the arena. When Kevin Durant went down with an injury, and to get a standing ovation for the injury, not to say, hey, man, hopefully you can come back and we're going to give you, you know, the applause for making the attempt. this was a jubilation that a terrific player who had come back and started to fire some daggers into the heart of the Toronto Raptors was injured and could not return. And it was disgusting. It was absolutely, positively disgusting. And just another reason the rest of the world, if you are a Raptors fan, hate you today. Because that was, and if you're a Raptors fan and you weren't there and you didn't do it, but it, I'm sorry, you're lumped into that whole bunch. You just are. It's it just the optics of it were just bad. Completely terrible. 855-830-8648, 855-830-8648. If you want to chime in, feel free to do so. This portion of the program is being brought to you by our good friends at Cousin Subs. If you want to be a VIP, here is your chance. You can enter the Big Gig Giveaway from Cousin Subs and Summerfest. There's 11 concerts and 11 nights at the American Family Insurance Amphitheater during Summerfest, and that means 11 chances to win. Now, each VIP concert package includes a couple of tickets, parking pass, gift cards, and a whole lot more, and 11 people are going to win this experience, and one of them could be you. You can enter daily at CousinSubs.com/BigGigGiveaway, and you can experience your best Summerfest ever. That's Cousin Subs, where they believe in better. The official sub sandwich of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network will continue. Coming up, more of this right after.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
You are back. We are glad you're here. Now, see, this is what bothers me. Rick from Oshkosh tweets us and says, "You're ignorant if you don't think that a couple of fans throughout every fan base would have applauded KD's injury. Has nothing to do with the entire fan base. Use your head." Rick, you are an idiot. Did you hear the arena last night? It wasn't a couple of fans. You didn't watch the game, Rick, or you didn't listen to the game. Because you can't be this stupid to even hit enter. Seriously, did you watch that game? Did you see that arena erupt and people pointing at him and jeering him? Did you see as he was walking off the floor, the people in the upper area background screaming at him, waving sarcastically, bye-bye? Did you see that, Rick? It wasn't a couple of people. You know what, Rick? Technically, you're right. A couple of people in each fan base probably would. But an entire arena, the majority of an entire arena, to be that loud and proud that you're waving a guy's injury bye-bye? Rick, you need to go back and watch the game. Don't ever hit enter again prior to actually knowing what you're talking about. Just saying. 855-830-8648. Let's go to Andy listening to us in Appleton. Andy, how you doing today, man? What's going on?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in Wisconsin. Packers fan, Brewers fan, Bucks fan.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad grew up in Buffalo, New York.
All right.
And so I'm also, for hockey, I'm a big Sabres fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to get out every now and then, about once a year, to a Sabres game. And quite often it's against Toronto. And, you know, I'm really starting to realize, I used to like some of the Toronto teams.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I loved the Raptors literally just because of their mascot. I thought he was hilarious. But I'm quickly realizing that while they are some of the most dedicated and passionate fans, they're some of the biggest tools in all of sports. I mean, because it's not just basketball. It's every sport that I watch. The fans are terrible. They're obnoxious. They're just morons. And it's despicable, really. This kind of thing, I mean, I don't like it when it happens anywhere. I hated it when Rodgers went down and the Vikings fans started cheering. I mean, that's terrible.
Right.
These are human beings, and you're cheering for an injury. You shouldn't cheer for that at any point.
Right.
I mean,
you kind of wait until he gets up, and then you give him a nice round of applause, so to speak, for the effort just to come back and try to play, and then you appreciate for what the human being is.
Well, and is that really how you want to win? You want to win because the best team on the other player goes down? Is that really how you want your legacy to be? Because if the Raptors win, everyone's going to say, well, yeah, but they didn't have Durant.
Mm-hmm.
So would they really have won? There's going to be a huge asterisk next to their title if they win, because that's all anyone's going to say is, well, yeah, but they didn't have the best player on the court playing against them. So no wonder they won.
I appreciate the phone call, Andy. He's got a different sense of kind of what Toronto fans can be. Again, it wasn't a couple of people. It was the majority of an arena. It got very loud and very obnoxious. So that was the disdain that I have for Toronto Raptors. Look, you can feel how you want. If you're a Raptors fan, that's fine. I'll lump you into that group just because. But it was poor. It was just a poor display of sportsmanship in any way, shape, or form. And we look at players as robotic commodities in many ways and forget that they're human beings. But this is a guy that worked his tail off to try to come back and help his team. And as you heard Bob Myers, the president of basketball operations before, he's just a guy that wanted to play. And you feel bad for the human being side of things. Forget the player. Forget the guy that's being paid millions. Just look at the human being, a guy that just wanted to come out and play and try to help his guys. I mean, his legacy, when you look at Kevin Durant, he didn't need to come back. His legacy, in some cases, would have been tarnished by the Skip Baylesses of the world by not trying hard enough. Because and that really bothered me last night. It was hypocritical. I was watching part or whatever it is that they do. What is that stupid show he does with Shannon Sharp, Joe?
Skip and Shannon, yeah. Undisputed. Which I'm surprised hasn't been canceled yet. I don't know.
They probably
anyone.
Got a contract. They got to keep it running for a little while. Anyway.
But literally, like, who watches that show?
No, I have no idea. I flipped through that? And I watched a snippet of it, and they were talking about Durant. This is like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days ago. And he was saying, if he's able to play, he needs to come back, or he'll be labeled nothing more than, like, what's the idiot that played in Chicago? That didn't want to come back because he didn't feel right.
Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose. That's who we compared him to. Thank you very much. Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose.
He's Derrick Rose. It's in his head. He doesn't want to tarnish his legacy because he knows they can't win. I mean, that was Skip. And now all of a sudden, you know, they basically call him out, want him to come back, and then he gets hurt. And now it's like, well, he shouldn't have come back. The doctor should have known. It's shut up. Just shut up. You know, he had nothing to come. The guy's a two-time MVP when it comes to winning championships. He's one of the best players, if not the best player on the planet. Top three, top four. There's nothing for him to come back and prove. But he wanted to come back and play just to kind of be with his teammates and help his team. So you give him credit for that. He did everything he could to come back, and then he injures it even worse. And that's the human side of things. That he was looked at as a broken commodity you just tossed by the wayside because that piece fell apart. And that's the shame of it. 855-830-8648. If you want to chime in, feel free to do so.
You know, I had tweeted out last night, and you can follow me on Twitter at Radio Joe Sports. I hope Toronto chokes in this series. I really do. I haven't even really shared my thoughts because when the Bucks got eliminated, I was on vacation. And it was really hard to try to not think about my job when the Bucks were going on and watching them choke that series away. And I understand Toronto. Look, Toronto earned it. Toronto wanted it more. Their defense was outstanding. They contained Giannis, and the Bucks just failed miserably at hitting open jump shots. It was just so annoying to watch. But at the end of the day, especially after what I saw last night with fans cheering while Kevin Durant is down on the ground, and then cross that with this Toronto team actually beating the Golden State Warriors, a vulnerable basketball team that I believe the Bucks should be in this position right now, and I believe the Bucks probably should be beating the Warriors. They could, I mean, if Toronto ends up winning this series, I'm going to look back on it and say the Bucks could have done it too. They could have been right there. All they had to do was play just a little bit better basketball, and that was it. So my feelings are this. As much as I respect that basketball team, Toronto, I hope that they choke the same way the Bucks did. I really do. And typically, I don't root for Golden State because I don't want to see Golden State win every single year. It gets boring after a while. But I just, between the Raptors showing they're better than the Warriors and fans being just completely just disrespectful to a guy that's hurt, I combine all that and say, you know what? I just hope they choke. That way I can feel a little bit better about myself as a Bucks fan. Because believe me, if Toronto wins this, I'm not going to feel any better about myself. I'm just not, because the Bucks.
But the Bucks had no business. Look, as much as people want to say that, the Bucks got their ass kicked. The Bucks had no answer for what Toronto gave them. They got their ass kicked. They didn't shoot well. They got out-defended. They got out-rebounded. They got out-played. They got out-quick. They got out-hustled. And they didn't have a shooter to keep up with Leonard.
There was no excuse for the Bucks.
They lost four straight, and they choked it all away.
There's no excuse for that performance. None of the performances.
You know, Bledsoe was a no-show in the series against Toronto. They got out, like I said, out-hustled, out-rebounded. I mean, they had an answer for Giannis. Giannis kept saying how he couldn't be stopped. He was stopped. He didn't amount to much. He wasn't the MVP that everybody expected him to be. This team, it was a learning step. They got their ass kicked in they had the first two games. The first one they struggled to get. The second one they blew him out, and then they got confident. And then after that, they didn't have an answer. And that goes straight from coaching all the way down to the last player on the bench. And they got their ass handed to them.
Well,
and Toronto deserved. Look, Toronto would be a great story if it wasn't for the fans and the fan, their super fan. Kawhi Leonard coming in there very quietly. He's not verbose. He's not over the top. He's not flashy. He just does his job. Lowry is a guy that just does his job. Siakam just does his job. They're not flashy. They're not beat up, unlikable guys.
Bunch of dudes that have been playing way
right.
over their heads.
Well,
way
but they,
over
but
their
they
heads.
Had the second best record in the NBA. How's that over their heads?
The odds were stacked against them going in, and everyone said it. We all said it.
I thought so too, but they're proving everybody wrong.
Is Fred Van Vliet ever going to play like this ever again?
Had a good game, and then he's had a bad game.
Bill, he has been unbelievable. Last two series. That's why the Bucks lost. Fred Van Vliet would not miss a three.
And the thing that I remember in the back of my mind more than anything is George Karl always telling me, when you get to the postseason, it's not about what you did in the regular season. It's about the matchups in the postseason and who figures out the matchups better. And right now, Toronto's just figured out the matchups better.
They're
quicker than everybody else. Is anybody watching this? They have wide open shots. They're so fast and pass the basketball so well.
I'm not trying to discredit Toronto and what they did to the Bucks. I'm just sour as a fan. I'm sour as a fan. This Bucks team should be in the NBA Finals, and they freaking blew it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, when I look at Toronto, and Toronto was on the verge of beating the Warriors last night, it makes me even feel worse about myself as a fan, because it's like, you know what? The Bucks could have beaten this Warriors team. All they had to do was just play a little bit better basketball, and they would be here, and
right.
they could beat a vulnerable Golden State team, and they didn't.
And they couldn't hit, but here's the problem. They couldn't even hit their free throws.
Yeah.
They couldn't even hit their free throws.
And I'll blame Giannis for part of that. After a while, it got to be hack of Giannis. Let's just hack Giannis. Just put him up on the line, see what happens. Because you know he's only going to be 50%.
Yep.
I was very disappointed in the way Giannis played throughout that series. And it wasn't just, you know, Toronto doing a good job of containing him. It's like, okay, get to the line and hit some freaking free throws, man. Come on.
Yep. No, I agree.
Come on. So, again, I cross all of this between the Bucks playing bad, Toronto being on their high horse, and then this stuff last night with Durant and the fans. I hope Toronto chokes. I hope Curry and Klay Thompson come out, be the Splash Brothers that everyone knows. Blow them away in Game 6. Let's bring it back to Toronto in Game 7 and shut this team down. That will make me much happier as a Bucks fan.
Ain't going to happen. Toronto's going to win this thing. I mean, I hope we're right there with you, but Toronto's
going
to win this
thing. Bill, nothing would surprise. This is the NBA Finals. Nothing would surprise me if we end up with a Game 7, because it always seems to be that way. It always seems to go back to a Game 7. Just when you think the series is over, they find a way to get back to a Game 7. I would not be surprised if this series goes back to Toronto.
855-830-8648, 855-830-8648. Real quick, we'll get to Jim Callis coming up here in just a moment, our senior writer for MLB Pipeline. We'll talk to him about the Brewers and their draft choices. Do want to remind you, though, our friends at Bud Light tell you that tomorrow night, Wednesday Night Live, back at the Budweiser Pavilion at the Wisconsin State Fair Park, and you got music on the stage. It all gets underway at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Gates open up at 6. It's free admission, as always. It costs you $6 to park a car, and it is free admission and free parking for motorcycles as well. So get out there tomorrow night. Enjoy yourself at Wednesday Night Live at the Wisconsin State Fair Park. It's all brought to you by our friends at Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Talking some baseball up next on the Bill Michaels Show.
Border to border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. I want
tell me how to live my life.
We're back, and we are glad you are on board. Hopefully you are enjoying your day. Another bright and sunshiny day. I don't know how long it's going to last, but let's hope it lasts for quite some time. The Michael Show continues on. This portion of the program being brought to you by our good friends over there at Quick Trip. Don't forget, if you're a professional driver, you're out there on the road, all you got to do is stop in any Quick Trip or Quick Star and get your Quick Rewards fleet card. You can download the app, track your points, earn things like free sodas and coffees and showers where the amenities are available. All for those of you that are out there kind of making all the goods and services move all across the highways and byways. Quick Trip wants to say thanks to you, and it can start even with your first purchase. So get in and get your Quick Rewards card and your Quick Rewards fleet card over at Quick Trip and Quick Star. The Milwaukee Brewers have culminated and completed their 2019 MLB draft. Jim Callis, senior writer for the MLB Pipeline, joining us now on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. The biggest thing, the draft for Major League Baseball is so different than the NBA or the NFL because none of these players really are expected to come in and contribute next year, whereas we're always looking for somebody that's going to come in and be a player or a role player almost immediately in the NBA and the NFL. So when you look at a Major League Baseball draft, what should the expectation realistically be?
You know, if you're looking at this year's draft, I mean, realistically, you know, I look at it two ways. In terms of how quick guys get there, you're probably talking, you know, except for the really elite players, you know, probably close to 3 years on most of the college guys and 4 years plus on most of the high school guys. And if you look at a draft as a whole, people always like kind of are surprised when I say this, but if you look at drafts as a whole, in a typical year, you know, counting the guys who sign, not the high school guys who go to college who turn into something, that there will be six or eight, you know, superstars, you know, star caliber type guys, you know, a Christian Yelich, if you would, in a draft maybe, and then there's maybe another couple dozen, you know, maybe in a really good year, three dozen guys who are solid big leaguers, who are regulars for 4 or 5 years, or in the rotation for that period of time. You know, not stars, but, you know, they're your year-in, year-out contributors. And then everybody else, you have guys who have up-and-down careers or a cup of coffee guys or whatever. So if you get one good player in the draft, like I'm talking about a guy who's a solid regular, you know, or even a solid bullpen piece for 4 or 5 years, you know, consistently, that's pretty much the average. If you get two of those guys in the draft, you're beating the average.
Because they take, I don't know how many players they took. They, 35, 40 players, something
40,
like that?
Yeah. It's 40 rounds.
Yeah, yeah, which is crazy. So in many cases, people look at high-end talent. Can you get that high-end talent out of high school versus the first or second year of college or versus a senior in college? Is there a philosophy to this? Because you talk about the lefty, Ethan Small, the lefty, the first-round draft choice for the Brewers out of Mississippi State. He's a senior. And people
he's a redshirt junior, technically.
Right.
It's a little different because he got hurt and he missed a year. And
correct.
He has more leverage than a senior.
So people will say, well, he's already been hurt. He's already got a bunch of pitches. He's almost used up before he gets there. I mean, how do you judge what he has and what he doesn't? And guys tend to get looked down upon if they go 4 years to college.
Well, most guys don't go 4 years of college. And I'd say, you know, Ethan Small hasn't gone for 4 years of college. I mean, he barely pitched as a freshman, and he had Tommy John surgery and missed a year. So it's not like he's been, you know, throwing 100 innings a year for 4 years. It's not anything close to that. You know, you get some teams that prefer college guys because they prefer to look at the statistical data. You have some teams that prefer high school guys because they feel like they're kind of, you know, more unshaped in pieces of clay and you can kind of mold them how you want and there's less mileage on the arms and that type of thing. I mean, to me, you know, having studied this, you know, for 30 years, talent's talent. Like, if you're a good player, it doesn't matter if you've come out of high school, if you've come out of college. A lot of the good guys who get considered college players were known quantities out of high school. They just wanted to go to college, or they were a projectable pitcher who hadn't grown into their stuff yet. And so that happens. You know, in Small's case, I don't think by any means he's got too much mileage on his arm. You know, he's a fascinating guy because he throws 86 to 92 miles an hour. You know, if you just look at the radar gun, you're like, okay, you know, 86, 92, that's kind of fringy. But nobody hits it. You know, he can throw that, like, right in the middle of the strike zone, and guys don't hit it. And you know, he gets good playing with his 6'3" frame. He's got a high three quarters arm slot. There's some crossfire in his delivery. He'll vary the tempo of his delivery. He's got. I had one organization tell me that they thought Ethan Small had the best fastball shape in the draft. Like, I guess, you know, from where it, you know, what it does from when it leaves his hand to when it crosses the plate, and guys just don't hit it. And he's probably, because they've gone the College World Series, he's probably going to wind up, I think he's second in the nation in strikeouts right now. He'll take over first place, I think, because he's in Omaha. And he does it relying very heavily on that fastball. He's got a pretty good changeup. There are games where you don't see a lot of curveballs because he doesn't need it, but he's got one of those invisible fastballs.
What do scouts or teams, once they get him into the system, what do they look for? Now, here's the other question. When it comes to Ethan Small, does he get, as he progresses, does he gain 2, 3, 4 miles an hour on that fastball just because of his body and the way that they're going to then mold him after he comes into the system?
Well, I mean, he is 22, or he's almost, yeah, he is 22, and he's 6'3", 215, so I don't know if he's necessarily going to get a lot stronger. I mean, you have all these, you know, kind of pitching laboratories that teams are doing with the Rapsodo and Edgetronics and the high-speed cameras and shape pitches. I mean, I would suggest, even Small's fastball is really, really good at 86 to 92 miles an hour. I don't think I would tinker with it. Like, I mean, you took Ethan Small at 28, because of how that fastball plays right now, I would not mess around with his fastball because you might add velocity to it and take away effectiveness. So I would just kind of let Ethan Small do what he's doing. You know, when he was a freshman, I mean, he was up to 96 miles an hour as a reliever, you know, in short stints. But, you know, he wasn't a very good pitcher. So he's much better where he is. So, I mean, I think, like, my personal philosophy is with college players, like, there may be things you want to change, but if you're taking a college player in the first round, who's had a lot of success, and your instinct is to change him, then you probably shouldn't take him because, you know, the guy's going in the first round for a reason. And I've seen numerous instances where teams have tried to alter, you know, something with a high-profile first-round pitcher out of high school or college and either diminished his stuff or gotten him hurt. So, like, all that said, I mean, we're just speculating. I don't think the Brewers have any plans to overhaul Ethan Small. I think they took him because it's an elite fastball. It plays that way, even though it's 86 to 92 miles an hour.
There's a bunch of lefties that – lefties are always a hot commodity, and everybody's looking for the next up-and-comer. So is it just kind of, you know, the buckshot approach where you're just going to shoot as many lefties as you possibly can get and then you hope that one just pans out, or is there a method to the madness?
Yeah, I mean, they did take a lot of lefties. I think, I'm looking at this, the first, I think, 6 of the first 7 pitchers they took were left-handers. I don't know if that was necessarily by design, as it was those were the best guys available when they picked. I mean, their second-round pick is really interesting, too. I mean, he averaged over 19 strikeouts per 9 innings in JUCO ball this year as a freshman, and it's kind of crazy. If you could see him, like, he's 6'6", and the ball comes out easy, and he can hit 98 miles an hour, and he'll sit 94, 97 for innings at a time. And guys, they're not making this comparison. They just say, you know, when you look at how easily the ball comes out of his hand, you look at the body, it looks a little bit like David Price. Now, the rest of his game, like, this guy's more of a project. Like, there's not really much consistency with repeating his delivery. He does need to get stronger. He needs to improve his secondary pitches and control. But he's a real interesting guy. So, like, while he and Ethan Small are both lefties, they're two entirely different kinds of lefties. And then the third lefty they took, Nick Bennett out of Louisville, is more of a pitchability guy, you know, with less stuff than those two guys.
Real quick, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Antoine Kelly and your thoughts about his prospect of becoming a big leaguer, I guess the best way to put it.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I wrote, and I do believe this, that of all the guys in the draft, he probably has the biggest gap between his ceiling and his floor. Like, if you could polish him up, I mean, he does things so easily and he's so gifted, he could pitch near the front of a big league rotation. And, I mean, there's also days where it looks like he has little feel for spinning a breaking ball and can't throw strikes. And you're like, man, how's this guy going to, you know, get into Double A? So, he's going to be real interesting to watch. He was kind of your classic swing for the fences pick. I mean, they are trying to hit a home run with that pick. I mean, they didn't overdraft him. I mean, I don't think he, you know, they didn't have a third round pick. He definitely wouldn't have gone to their fourth rounder. You know, he's a fascinating guy. There were a lot of teams intrigued by him.
Always good to chat, Jim. I certainly appreciate the time. Real quick, before I let you go, positionally, obviously catcher is always something that everybody's looking for. First base is a conversion place where some guys just get moved there just because. Is there a position player that you really are high on coming into the Brewers organization?
Well, the interesting one to me is Thomas Dillard. I got some poor man's Kyle Schwarber comparisons on him. Guys like the way he works the counts at the plate. He's got raw power. He may or may not be a catcher. He was not Ole Miss's primary catcher. I'll be curious to see, you know, how long he stays behind the plate. But the fourth-round catcher they took, Nick Cale, is more your kind of a typical catcher. I think Dillard's got a higher offensive ceiling. Cale is a better bet to stick behind the plate.
Always good to chat, Jim. We certainly appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us for a couple of minutes, okay?
Yeah, great talking to you. Thanks.
You too. Appreciate it, pal. There you go. That is our buddy Jim Callis joining us for a couple of minutes, senior writer for the MLB Pipeline, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. When we come back, I'm going to try to get an update from up in Green Bay. Mike Clemens coming up next on the Bill Michaels Show.
16 stations strong, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
We are glad you are here, and we are going to take a trip up north. We're going to head towards Green Bay. The Bill Michaels Show continues on. Mike Clemens, NFL Sirius Radio, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline as minicamp is underway. Michael, well, first and foremost, did Mr. Jones report today?
Hello?
Michael, hey, how you doing?
Good. I'm sorry I just had to move down here to the practice field. I'm great. It's a beautiful day up here at the Hinkle Field, and it's a closed practice session, but everybody's here. And the big question about Josh Jones, and yeah, he's out here wearing a New Jersey number 24. He's about 20 yards away from me on the sidelines. He's got a jersey on, he's got his gold pants, and no helmet, which means he's not going to participate, but he's out here watching. They probably don't want him to touch the field right now.
So the next question is, everybody else is there, everybody else is happy, are things looking good, jubilation, what's going on?
Well, man, Mike Daniels, you know, he's the same status where he'll be out here for warm-ups. He's attended these OTAs and practices, but he's not participating yet as he's still coming off of his foot injury from last year. Brian, you know, we've been talking about the right side of the offensive line and who's going to start there. And right. I have a feeling right now, you know, the lead is going to be Billy Turner, the offensive lineman they brought in free agency from Denver. He's their number one at right guard right now, and Belaga's taking those first-team snaps at right tackle. Now, whether or not he'll later in this practice, we just turn to the fourth period, whether he goes with 11-on-11, he's kind of stayed out when they go 100% for speed and they bring in other guys for those kinds of snaps. But I think that's, you know, the way that they're leaning right now at that position. There's a couple of undrafted guys that are not participating today, but otherwise, they're into their drills. And I think we want to see here, Bill, is it, have they actually made progress now? Can you see a little bit of chemistry? Can you see some guys in sync with these new formations? You know, Aaron Rodgers can line up with Devontae, and he can line up with Geronimo Allison. But can MVS, Mark Krebs, Valdez Scantling, can he do some sharp things in practice to show that the playbook is starting to absorb and they can get some timing in before they break for training camp?
That was going to be my next question, is how much – have they absorbed? Because this is your last shot before you actually get into training camp, and then you're supposed to know it, because now it's just talking about honing your skill.
Yeah, and you know, my sense is, and I'm talking to the coaches, like, they hope they can get a lot of the things installed in this book, but that they're working so much still on fundamentals, technique the way Matt LaFleur wants it done, and he's out here in the golf cart with the, you know, the leg fully extended in the cast from the Achilles surgery from about 10 days ago. They're working on these fundamentals and techniques and formations and outside zone blocking schemes and, you know, route running. So they're working a lot of those fundamentals the way they wanted to do before they get really deep in the playbook. So I don't think they're going to get all the playbook in like you would have in years past. They're just trying to work on those kinds of things and still evaluating. You know, plenty of players being evaluated as who's making progress through this camp.
How has it been for Matt LaFleur being able to do this from a golf cart?
Well, you see players, you know, Belaga just walked over and talked to him in between periods, you know, say, hi, how's it going, that kind of thing. He might have had a question about his own status about, you know, the rest of practice or what's going on. In between periods there, when players are warming up, Mike Patton will walk over to him and they'll have a long chat. So, you know, instead of him going to where he wants to go, he has to watch this stuff a little bit from afar, from the sideline or from the the back of the group, and I know that that's, you know, that's got to be eating them up, because as we talked about earlier this spring, this guy was all over the field. He's throwing footballs. He was participating in drills. He was dipping his head in the huddle. He'd run over to the defensive side, watch the play come to him, and instead, he's got to be more of a field general. He's got to catch things, and he's got to shout at a position coach to say, hey, catch this for me on the next rep.
Hey, before I let you go, Mike Pettine, we know that when Mike McCarthy came in, he hired Dom Capers and said, Dom, you take the defense. I don't want to have to deal with it. How much is LaFleur actually involved with the defense?
Oh, I think he's so focused on the backfield, Bill, and then he's worried a little bit about the perimeter and all that. I don't think he's looking at the defense at all. I really don't. I mean, Mike Pettine's reported to him. You know, another thing that's come clear to me is this. You know, you're talking about a pass rush and getting the pressure on, and you had Clay Matthews and Nick Perry here and all that. And I there was probably a split there between Winston Moss, a longtime McCarthy guy, and Mike Pettine. And now, with Mike Smith, a former player, a guy that was been really close with Mike Pettine for several years, he's now brought in one of his closest guys in his NFL career as the outside linebackers coach with Preston Smith and Zadarius and these other guys that they brought in. So that's got to make things, those operations smoother on the defensive side, as Mike Pettine now has got a trusted guy who gets his defense to tenure, and that could really pay off some dividends going into this season.
Great stuff, Michael. We appreciate it, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Unit.
There you go. Mike Clemens, brought to you by our friends over at Chili's. You get the entree drink, just $10. Oh, you got a starter in there as well with the 5 crowd-pleasing entrees to choose from. It's never been easier to make the whole table happy. Together, we Chili's, and they bring you Mike Clemens reports from Green Bay. More of the Bill Michaels Show coming up next.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.